Not even a chance. I couldn't, when I was in active addiction, I couldn't even imagine what my life was going to look like at down the road. Cause there was like, no, you don't see that far. All you're thinking about is getting your next fix. I would never imagine that my life is what it is now, that I'm able to do the things that I do now. Yeah, it's just, I was never good at school. I never thought I'd be able to get through nursing school. And now I've done it twice. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, to your point about the guilt thing, sometimes I feel guilty about being where I'm at because I see so many people struggle with it so much.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, why was it so easy for me? I only went to detox one time. People, like, relapse is a part of almost everybody's story. I haven't relapsed. I'm very, very thankful for that. But sometimes I'm like, why was it? Like, why did I get it and other people seem to struggle so much, you know? So there's like that weird little thing. But I'm also really proud of myself for getting here. And the only thing that I can do is to try to give back and help other people get there and share my story with them.
Amazing.
Let me see what happens when I click this button. Hello? 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 No, that changed nothing.
Am I here?
Ah, there you are.
Sounds great. Okay. We will take it, and this is partly why the show is called You Never Know. Because you never know if the interview will either even fucking happen. It's crazy.
I think at this point, we kind of know that there will be definitely technical difficulties every
single
time.
Yes.
I'm a little sticky in my hands today. I don't know why. Sorry, that's weird. I'm Jay Candle. Welcome back. I'm here with my co-host.
You're not supposed to intro me. Hi, guys. I'm Adrian. It's lovely to be back again.
We got Ellen here. My ex-wife finally started to come forward with her story.
If you imagine.
No, just playing.
I think it will be terrifying if that day ever comes.
One day it will happen.
Well, people don't know what she looks like, right? So I very well could be.
Not really, yeah.
You very well could be. I don't want to paint you in that light at the moment. So this is Ellen Reed, and I'm really happy you joined us.
Well, thank you. How you doing, Ellen? I am great. I'm so excited to see you, Jake. And I know, like, I'm just so excited to see Adrian, too. Ever since I've listened to Blink. That was one of the things, you know, obviously people leave the podcast with a lot of, like, questions and, like, things that they want to know more about. And I was like, I want to know more about Adrian and, like, how she's doing these days. And so, anyway, I'm excited to see you.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet you and with you, too.
We'll definitely get to all that fun stuff and give you the chance to ask us whatever. But maybe we can just start off with you introducing yourself.
Okay, so I am in St. Louis, and I work with people really all over the world on performance coaching. So I listened to Blink. That's how I got here. I listened to Blink, and I reached out to Jake on Instagram. I had just finished the podcast, so I was like fresh off it and, you know, just super inspired and like, let me just see if I can find this guy. So I found him on Instagram and just sent him a message and said, listen, like, thank you for sharing your story. This is kind of what I do for a living is I try to teach people to develop the mental toughness and skills that you have exuded through this process. And it was just so inspiring to listen to. And then he responded and was like, well, you know, maybe we could connect. And so anyway, that was kind of the beginning of our conversations. And so, yeah, I work with professional athletes, elite level athletes. I work with business professionals on performance coaching. And so that looks, you know, like a lot of different things and a lot of different scenarios, but that's kind of how we connected.
Very cool.
How'd you start doing that?
So I actually, it's funny because I don't know if I told you this, but I was a professional dancer for really up until like 3 years ago. So all through like school, you know, growing up, I was, you know, I would go home from school and go straight to, you know, do my homework and go straight to dance, like to rehearsals. And then through high school, continue doing the same thing. Through college, continue doing the same thing. And so I was always, you know, really into kind of the academics, but also dance. And so I just kind of kept that going, like kept kind of going on both of those trains. And so when I was in school for psychology and working on my doctorate, I was also pursuing this professional dancing thing. And so I had this kind of connection to sports psychology because, you know, I was a dancer, an athlete, and interested in psychology. And I met my now colleague. His name's Dr. Jason Selk. And he was the director of sports psychology for the St. Louis Cardinals, the baseball team. And I started working with him, like, in graduate school and just kind of doing administrative stuff while I was working on my doctorate and dancing. And then I just kind of started following in his footsteps. I would take on clients of his, like, well, if people would reach out to him for coaching, but, you know, he was getting pretty successful, pretty popular, and they couldn't afford coaching with him, he would send them to me. So I kind of just worked, like, kind of followed in his footsteps and, you know, continued dancing. And then I would finish rehearsals and run home and sit in this seat, you know, in front of my computer and work with my clients virtually. So kind of happened a little bit by accident, but really organically.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. You majored in psychology, I assume?
Yes, I majored in psychology in undergrad. And so I don't even know if we haven't talked about any of this, Jake. So yes, and I have a doctorate in psychology, so in cognition. So, you know, really, I'm really a researcher by training, you know, kind of how the mind works, how memory works, how our behavior works. And so that's, you know, that's what I apply to people working through their goals or working through challenges. Again, like whether it's an athlete or somebody working through something challenging in life or in business, really, it's all very universal. It's really interesting. You know, the things that we struggle with as humans and in our business or in our relationships really are the same things that the professional athlete struggles with. It's just kind of packaged a little bit differently.
It's like mental stamina, being able to like push through something.
100%. Yeah, cool. 100%.
That's awesome. That's a hard thing to do.
It is. And that, you know, that's what kind of brought me to you guys, you know, is I was like, gosh, this, you know, this guy has exuded so much relentlessness through this process. And essentially that's what I'm trying to teach people is how to develop this. We call it relentless solution focus. How to develop that. And I think just, and that's why I was so excited to talk to you too, Adrian, because you know, I know you're kind of like a supporting actress in this podcast, right? But like you have, like, I'm so interested in your story too, because where we were left with you was, you know, probably a hard part of your story, right? Like, with addiction and, you know, what you are like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I'm like, well, I'm assuming now you're not dealing drugs and like
no
in a totally different part
now
of
I do
life.
It legally and, actually
right
now I just
right you're
deal
a nurse
drugs
now
legally and... with a license yeah
that's amazing and so I know that you know without knowing any part of your story through that journey have exuded this too, you know, that stamina and relentlessness and working through challenges. So anyway,
Absolutely.
I just
feel like I want to pick everybody's
brain. Really is.
I know.
It really is interesting how when you were saying it's all like universal, I really only realized that probably when I was in the hospital recovering, I was so focused and I knew the mission and it was all about that. But then when I moved back to my community, I could apply these things to everything else. And it was like simple, you know, like that's the wrong word. It's not simple, but the practice at least is simple.
Yes. Oh, I think that is the right word.
A long time.
Totally.
Maybe it is the right word.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean whatever you want to achieve is going to be easy or simple. It's just the steps of building that out. You know how people always say, I wish I knew what I knew now then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hindsight.
I'm that dude now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, I'm like, damn.
Well, I think that is, I mean, I think it is simple, right? It's very hard, but it's very simple. And I think actually that's where a lot of people get stuck is when they try to overcomplicate it. And so when we can kind of go back to the simplicity of, all right, like, what's my very next thing? Like, what's my very next step? Versus like, okay, I got to get from here to here. What are the millions of things that have to happen in the right order in order for that to happen? So when we can simplify things in a lot of different ways, but, you know, into just the very next step, the very next thing, which is hard to do. It kind of goes against our nature. Like, we tend to see the whole picture. Like, we tend to see the whole mountain, right? But, and this is, like, kind of what I took a lot from Link, too, is that you had to be very strategic about focusing on just the very next thing. Because I think anybody else in your position would look at how far you had to go, right? And just that kind of helplessness would set in. And what, like, there'd be no motivation, right? It robs us of our motivation when we overcomplicate things.
Absolutely.
Something you just said there, though, I feel like, well, which part of my story are you referring to? Like, the recovering in the hospital or the locked-in type?
Well, okay, so when you went through, I would say, I mean, all of it, but I think it's really evident in the recovering in the hospital. And I also think it's almost even more evident right now, like, in your continued recovery right now. I would say that, like, when you were locked in, right, like, what you were working, nothing was visible what you were working through, right? It was all just obviously in your mind. But I thought one of the coolest things about that was how you talked about literally that time when you were kind of like giving yourself therapy in your mind.
Talking to yourself a lot.
What I was thinking when you said, you know, anyone else in that situation, I was thinking about the locked in time. And I just feel as I had no other choice, neither would anyone else. You can't even give up, because if you do give up, you're stuck. You're in the same place. So it's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, yeah, the self-talk, I don't know if that's unique or not, but I hope no one ever has to go through this. But if they did, it's like, people ask me, how do you recover so well? How did you recover from that? And I'm like, I don't know. Somebody noticed me. I didn't do anything.
You did, but right? You didn't.
I mean, I wanted to die. I did. I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it on. I wouldn't die. I gave up. But I had no choice.
So what about that time? Like, what? Tell me more about that. I know this isn't like, you know, this isn't like me asking you questions about this stuff, but I'm so interested. Like, that time when you were like, okay, like, I'm here, right? And you, like, you really, like, kind of took a deep dive into your thoughts. And it was all self-talk. Like, that's all you had. When you were locked in, all you had was your self-talk. And that's generating brain activity, right? And so the fact that you did that, again, like, I think it's hard. It would be hard to argue that that didn't have a lot to do with your recovery. Just the action and activity that that's giving in your brain, you know? So whether that self-talk was positive or negative, right? Like, that's important. But in that case, I think the fact that you were kind of putting yourself through that and engaging in so much self-talk, I think it'd be hard to argue that that didn't have a lot to do with your recovery.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, and then I do agree that that had something to do with it, and then I'll dive into it. But one thing, someone else was in there, like, they would choose to lie silent. I mean, yes, they are silent, but in their own head. Like, would either of you?
I don't know if you could be silent in that situation. I don't know if there would be any way to stop your mind from just going. And especially in the beginning, when you're like panicking because you're stuck in this state.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you talk about how you started like thinking about geography or thinking about this or thinking about that and like making your brain work, like playing games with yourself almost to, I don't know, occupy your time or to keep your mind going, you know. I don't know. At a point, I don't think you'd have a choice. There's always going to be something in the back of your head going.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Whether it's positive or negative or just occupying time, I feel like I was not unique in that regard. Like, nobody's just going to lie for 10 months.
Right, right.
They're either going to say to themselves, this fucking sucks, or count to a million, or daydream. No one's just like doing nothing for 10
but
months.
But we don't really know, okay, right? Because like, we've never really heard any other stories. Yeah. So,
right, right.
Maybe some people are totally silent.
Yeah, right. But I think that's such a good point, Adrian. Like, yeah, you weren't just like counting to a million. You were like, and not the whole time, right? But to your point, like geography, like playing game, like that kind of stuff. That's, you know, like if I need to kind of work out my brain here, you know, what's a way I could do it? And it sounds like you kind of took on that challenge a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start by telling you more about that time. Okay. And then either of you can poke and pry, tell me more about that. And then we'll move on. So when I first realized what was happening, I was just aware that I was dying and not able to move, but I didn't realize, I thought I was vegetative. And then when I learned that, panic sets in. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm fully aware. I heard them saying the brain dead word. I even thought, am I brain dead? Is this a hallucination? I quickly realized this is actually happening. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm stuck. Panic. I would say within about 4 hours, okay, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to let someone know that I still have a functioning brain? I know who I am. I feel, I hear, I think. And it's really important to do so before I die in a couple of weeks, because this is scary. I thought about all the other people in a variety of hospitals that are deemed comatose. And I can't be the only one. I'm not that fucking special. This must be happening. So I gotta let them know before I die. How? Then I started thinking about like kind of that Kill Bill scene. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys seen that movie where
like wiggle your toe. Yeah.
And I can't move my eyes well. I can't really see, but I'm like, okay. Okay. And like nothing's happening. That's not it. Then my head went to, I gotta keep track of time. I don't know why I felt that was important. Kind of irrelevant in retrospect, but it felt very important to me. And there was no clock in my line of sight. I realized you know better, Adrian, when someone's can't move, how often does a nurse come in the room to like check them or turn them or whatever?
You're supposed to be turned every 2 hours, whether that happens or not. Is another story.
I was going to say, I don't think it was 2 hours. It was probably 3 or 4. It could have been 2. I mean, I was in a good hospital, pretty dire circumstances, so maybe it was 1.
Yeah.
But I'm also in so much pain that occupied, I would say, 70% of all my time. Heart rate, going crazy, whatever. But I realized when these nurses would turn me, I got a quick positional glance of a computer monitor and I could catch a little time occasionally. It was a screensaver, no time. So that wasn't really a good way. And then it also never said AM or PM. Anyway, so I started counting. If I can figure out what a real second is and I count 60 of them, then I know a minute. And then I can replicate the feeling of 10 minutes, half hour. And then I know what an hour is. And then, yeah, okay, this is not working at all. Because then I would like pass out from like storming. Then I went to, wow, I am fucked and I'm going to die and no one's ever going to know. And it can't come soon enough. So I'm just waiting and I'm waiting. And then when it wasn't pain or crisis or someone in the room, and when people weren't in the room, I would be my sarcastic self and I would talk back to them as if they could hear me. 70% of the time is occupied by pain or nursing or me making fun of whoever's in my room. The other 30, boredom. I am so bored and I'm uncomfortable. And that's when the thoughts, the geography or the, yeah, I remember going to Hungary. And what was that place with the gondola? And what's the name of that restaurant? And thinking about these things. And with that came, Ellen, you're like this, some visualization.
Yeah. I mean,
but it wasn't like visualization you're teaching
right.
me. It was the actual memory in like an Instagram reel format. I'm not going to say I like smelt and everything. It wasn't really like that. But I was like visiting there and saw what I really did. And it was that. It wasn't I'm imagining what I could have done. It was nothing like
right.
that. And then I hear I'm supposed to die on Christmas. I knew that was coming soon. And then I started having pretty vivid wild hallucinations, which was really odd because I was able to keep a grip on reality, even though when I was like hallucinating really hard. And I'm not talking about the hallucinating we used to do, Adrian. Like, you know, take some acid
ones.
And watch a... No, I mean, this was like the room melted and morphed, and all of a sudden I'm in a wheelchair in the middle of a mall that felt like Prudential Mall. And I'm like, why did they bring me here? And then I'm looking around and I'm like, why is my nurse the cashier? And then I'm looking around, wait a minute, I can't move my neck. They wouldn't bring me here. This isn't real. But I would like to leave now. And I felt like they left me there for so long.
So weird.
That it was ridiculous. Then Christmas passed and I didn't die. And then New Year's passed and I didn't die. And then I'm on hospice. I'm very defeated, extremely sick, beyond bored, tired of it. But I'm, wow, I might be stuck like this forever if I don't die. And it doesn't look like I'm going to die. That's when I started doing some real visualization and thinking about my life, how it went, and talking to myself about my problems. And, you know, as I've been quoted in the past, before Blink, I started utilizing my time more wisely, but the fact is it was all I could do.
Yeah.
I said a lot. Is there anything you wanna ask me?
I'm just so interested in. I'm like, oh, I felt like I was listening to Blink again for a second. I'm like, oh wait, I'm supposed to be responding here. Because are there other people who have experienced this? Like, have you connected with anybody else that's gone through what you've gone through in terms of locked in?
Okay. So there are levels to locked in,
mm-hmm.
right? There are people who are totally locked in, virtually locked in, nonverbal in the slightest, nonverbal, and none of it's good. I have connected with one person who was locked in for 2 weeks, and I don't know which level, really. Mm-hmm. And his experience was much different.
Mm-hmm.
He was very calm, and I don't think he was in a lot of pain, and it was very religious and just at peace with it all. But I've never really talked to anyone who went through what I actually experience. And then a few of my neurologists are like, you might be the only one like that was like this. So there's like because there are certainly people out there who are like, I had locked-in syndrome and I don't know what they actually had or not. Or but I you know, I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you
There's no support.
Right, exactly. So you're going to hate this question because I know you're going to want to say that probably, well, you'll understand in a second. So what do you think? What do you think you did that contributed to where you are now? Like in that stage when you were locked in, what do you think, like looking back at it, like that probably made a little bit of a difference? Again, I know it's probably hard for you to say that because, you know, it's probably easier to say like, no, it's just, you know, luck or chance. But what do you
Well, you reminded me of one thing I want to say earlier. So very early on when I knew how I was perceived, I said to myself, my body is failing me. Everything is gone. The only thing I have left is my brain, and that is a muscle, and I should keep that active. So there was, I did say that and I knew, but I, you know, as this went on, I frankly, I lost hope and I was scared. But I just like didn't have, I always look at like the alternative. What's the alternative, right? And there wasn't one.
What else could you do?
And I think it was one of those moments where you like, you know, very dramatic Hollywood movie, like fall to your knees and you're like, wow.
In your own
In my own head.
Right.
In my own head. And that's what started the talk. Someone answered me and it was me.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That, just that phrase of like, okay, you know, this is all I've got. I've got to work with this, right? Like, this is all I've got. I've got to make sure this is as strong as possible. And you weren't perfect at it, right? Like you said, you went through phases where you lost hope and you weren't perfect at it. What is perfect at that even look like, right? But even in just, you know, listening to your story about that time, you can see that through your, you know, geography lessons and through that, like, kind of really deep dive stuff into your memories and your all of that, you know, that is the part of Blink that touched me the most was you, that everything you just described and like, this is all I have. So that I have to make the most out of that, that solution focus, you know, and my gosh, talk about relentlessness.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mental relentlessness, and then in your recovery, you are just as relentless too.
Yes.
Yeah, Adrian, have I always been relentless? You've known me for a long time.
Depending on what you're focused on, yes. Whatever you wanted at that time, you were relentless in getting or doing.
Give me 30 examples from back in the day on things I was relentless on.
I mean, even something as simple as when you started selling soda and things like that at school.
Yeah.
You kept on with that. You know what I mean? As you got older, I mean, your cooking stuff, you were always relentless. You loved the cooking. You know what I mean? It was always trying new things and moving forward with that. And anything that you decided you wanted to do, even if it was like, hey, we're going to have like a big fucking birthday party and we're going to go to Atlantic City in a limo. We're doing it. We're doing it all the way. Always relentless.
Yeah. Well, and I love hearing those examples of like, okay, this is how you've shown this in other areas. Like this is kind of you. This is your MO. Because to you, you know, when you were like, when I was asking you about this earlier and you're like, I don't know, like, what else would you do? Of course I talked myself through this. And of course I, you know, did this and that when I was locked in. Because wouldn't everybody, right? That sounds so normal and obvious to you. because you are, you know, you are so relentless and, you know, mentally tough in that sense that it does seem normal to you, which is an awesome thing. And that's, you know, that's why I reached out initially. And I'm like, gosh, I'm trying to teach people to be that. That's what I do for a living, is I try to teach people how to develop this relentlessness, this solution focus. And so when we see stories like you, it reminds us of how much the human mind is capable of, right? The human body is capable of, like, how much we are, as humans, are capable of. You know, we've talked about this, you know, your purpose and your kind of vision for your life and purpose for your life is, like, you know, helping other people gain this perspective, right? Without having to go through what you went through. And I think that that's exactly what your story does. You know, if he can do this, I can do this, right? Like, if he could get through that, I can get through this thing that feels so huge in my life and so insurmountable. But compared to that, like, okay, I can handle this. So I just think it's so cool to see you. You've done it through Blink, obviously, but you're continuing to do it in kind of your life and your journey after Blink.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to remember what you asked me.
What do you think you did that made an impact on you recovery?
Well, I don't know. I'm just going to say it. I don't think, certainly talking to myself and keeping my brain active, I think my initial thought of your brain's a muscle. It's the only one working, minus my dick, as in the world knows. But it was right. And I think that is the main thing I did that contributed. But the rest of the story is, like, the stars aligned here.
I mean, yeah.
If I wasn't in Boston, like, if I wasn't transferred then, and then doctor who noticed was on rounds, would have been someone else a month later? Maybe. Would have died of a urinary tract infection before? Probably. Or maybe not. I survived like 7 of those. I didn't realize how bad they are.
Yeah. They also can make you confused. Well, they can make you very confused too.
Oh yeah.
I was confused enough.
But you know,
help the confusion.
We can always say that about everything. And I'm the reason I'm pushing you on this a little bit, and not to say that you don't recognize how awesome you are, but I like, and I know, again, like, part of my MO is, like, I want to point out to people, you know, what about them is really remarkable and extraordinary. Not that you need any convincing of that, but, like, we can all say that about everything. You know, if I hadn't gone to this school, or I hadn't have moved to this place, or that happened, then yeah, like, things wouldn't have worked out the way they did. And so, and I'm not even saying you're doing this, but it's so normal to dismiss our role in it and just give it to all the external circumstances, right? And so that's why I kind of keep coming back to this, because I think if we can identify, right, like, what is it about me that makes me great, then we can repeat that, right? We can apply it to other things. And you do that in your life. You know, you do that in your life just normally. But I think the beauty of this is that other people can then see that in you, you know, that, like, okay, this guy has, you know, kind of made the decision to, you know, my brain is a muscle. I'm going to exercise it. And, you know, that's what his focus was on. And he wasn't perfect at it. But, you know, that there's no doubt that contributed to where you are, you know. And you see that in your recovery now. You know, that's just you. It's just you. You're like, well, of course I'm going to go to my PT today. Of course I'm going to, like, spend extra time and work on this. Of course I'm going to, like, wouldn't everybody? No.
Relentlessly.
Yep. That is like a whole different life.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, the time period I was talking about. The other thing, I just wasn't ready to go. There was so much more I wanted to do, and I had such a love for life, even though I was frankly a mess and depressed. I really did have a love for life and a good time. And I wasn't ready to go, and that's not how it was supposed to end. The reason I don't say that super often is because there are plenty of people who feel that way and die. So why am I different? Like, I don't, that's not fair.
You shouldn't look at it that way. Everybody has a little bit of a different path, right? Happened for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can't say like, oh, this guy survived because he wanted.
Right. But mindset, right. There are
people I've heard
is a big thing when it comes to recovery, whether like whatever stage people are in, you know what I mean? Definitely. And it's even more remarkable that you've recovered because you were also cut off from anything familiar and comforting too. And that's a huge part of people's recovery, whether they're in comas, chronic illnesses, in the hospital for 5 days, whatever it is, having support and connection and feeling a purpose and having a good mindset makes a difference in recovery.
Huge.
What do you mean, like cut off from family?
Yeah, you were cut off from everything familiar. Yeah, what I mean.
I forgot about that.
You forgot about that? You forgot?
I'm just
I was cut off.
Kidding. You know my humor.
Well, but I think that's a really...
What do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean?
I think that's a really good point. That, well, both of them. But I think to your point, Jake, like, it's hard. I see what you're saying. Sometimes we are hesitant to be optimistic because we're afraid of what if I really want something and what if I really work for it and it doesn't happen? Then I'm going to be devastated. And so, but we know from the research that optimism is so highly correlated to us achieving our goals. Like, and it's really is amazing. Like, the research on it is really clear. Optimism is, it's associated with longevity, you know, down to the cellular level. People who have higher levels of optimism and solution focus live up to 14 years longer. So it's not just in our minds, you know, it affects our bodies. It affects our longevity. But I feel like kind of what you just said, like there's a little bit of a sense of like, yeah, I want, you know, if I just want it bad enough, right? Like that is going to shape how we work through it, right? And there is that fear as humans that if I want it so bad and I work so hard for it and it doesn't happen, like that's going to hit so much harder. But the good news is that the research just doesn't back that up. In fact, the research shows that people who are more optimistic and have higher levels of optimism, they're better at, you know, kind of dusting themselves off and picking themselves up and going towards the next thing. Now, that wouldn't apply in, you know, had you not lived through that. Obviously, right? Like in some situations that wouldn't apply if you die. Right. Like that's pretty final. but that's why optimism and solution focus is always a great message, right? And so, and again, that's like, that's what you have and that's what you've exuded.
Definitely. I mean, I fully agree that, and I preach this too, and like recovery talks and everything. It's like, it certainly can't hurt.
Yeah.
Like it's going to improve your odds.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Right?
But also there was a young guy I recovered with and he was at a higher level point than I was at. And then I kind of surpassed him. You know, he was so positive and he grinded as hard as me. And it just like didn't work out. And he thought you can obviously have that mindset and it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
But I can't, it can't hurt, you know, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing too, that like we also don't know, like we don't know, like this other guy to your that you're talking about, like who knows what his path would have looked like had he not grinded as hard as he did, and right, like we don't know our outcomes, right? And so all we can do is stay solution focused, right? And if one path doesn't lead where we want it to, then we change course and move on to the next. But yeah, I mean, it's relentless solution focus, you know, and that's why I reached out. Cause I'm like, this is it. You are it, you know? And also I think the other thing that's been, and you too, Adrian, I mean, really, like, again, that's where I'm like, I feel like there's a whole part of your story that I'm missing, right? Because I heard, you know, kind of like the early days of Jake, right? And kind of your all's relationship there. And then fast forward to now, and you're in nursing and, you know, like all these great things. Like, that didn't happen just by accident.
It's so weird not putting your whole story on a global platform. Why didn't you do
me put my whole story on a global platform? I don't know. I'm not as confident in it. I don't know. I'm more shy. But
yeah,
when it comes to like the recovery stuff, I mean, kind of similar to like what you're talking about to apply it to recovery. It's like we tell people, take it one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time, if you have to just get, you move forward so slowly. You can't always be like projecting out into the future, because then this challenge, which is like stopping using a substance that you've been relying on for however many years, that looks like an impossible thing to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So it's really about taking it one day at a time, less than that if you need to, like I said, 1 minute, 1 second at a time, just to get through and keep moving forward. And that's a really, really hard thing to do. And that's like,
yeah,
addicts really like instant gratification. So they want to feel better now. They want this to work now. They want to be recovered now. But it doesn't work that way. There's all these steps in between, and you have to take them one at a time. You can't go from here to here.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible to do. It's impossible to do. So
yes.
Sorry. It's interesting to like hear you talk about it, and then I'm like, oh, this is what we say when we're like helping people
exactly
get detox. Yeah. It's like, just give it one more hour. Don't leave detox yet. Give it one more hour. Sleep on it tonight, and then decide if you want to go the next day. You know, don't make any impulsive decisions, you know, and throw it all away, and then you have to start from the bottom all over again.
It's all so connected. Like, it's all so connected. And that journey that you just talked about is the same journey that, you know, we go through when working towards any goals, right? Like, and that's one thing that kind of, this concept of relentless solution focus, which is essentially just optimism, right? Like, one of the rules, right, is that we have to change the way that we define solution. Like, we don't define solution as total recovery, total resolution of the problem. We have to define solution as just 1 inch of an improvement to my current situation. Because when we, to your point, when we look at that end result, or when we look at the whole mountain, which is how we're designed, right? Like, we tend to do that. We tend to look at the whole mountain, which is why people tend to give up before they even take those first few steps. And so really changing our perspective on what a solution is to just like, what's 1 inch better? And that's exactly what you're describing. And that's hard. It's hard. It's so simple, isn't it? Right? Like, Jake, you said that earlier.
It's it is so very simple, but it's so hard. And watching people struggle through it sometimes, I'm just like, I don't know. I like can't do anything really more to help them, because, you know, they're going to make the decision that they're going to make. But it's like, if you just like give it just a little bit of time, just give it a little bit more time, just do this one thing first, just try to look at this one thing. Like, you're not on the street now. We're going to figure out where you're going. You know what I mean? It's just, it's hard to keep people so present. And then I feel like people psych themselves out so much, because it's like, well, this, and this has to happen for me to get here. And if I lose one thing along the way, I'm not going to make it. So I'm just not going to do any of it at all. So it's like catastrophizing on a situation that you have no idea about yet. You just have to start at the beginning.
You have such a great way of describing that. And can I teach something? Because I think I have a feeling that probably a lot of your listeners are probably struggling with addiction or recovery on some level, or just in life. But one thing you said, you kept saying, just what's that one thing? Right. And like, that's exactly how we should be thinking of it, whatever we're struggling through with life. So this thing called the RSF tool, the Relentless Solution Focus tool that we teach, it comes in the form of a question. It's really simple, It's just, what's one thing I can do right now that could make this better? What is one thing I can do right now that could make this better? So, you know, write that down, put it on your nightstand, put it on your mirror, put it on your computer. It's one thing I can do right now. It's not what is going to get me through this. What's going to get me to my result? It's one thing I can do that's going to get me that next inch of improvement. And the powerful thing about the fact that that's a question is that when we're asked a question, even if we're asking a question of ourselves, our brain has this thing, it's called instinctive elaboration, where we can't help but focus on answers to that question. Like everything else in our brain kind of quiets down and we focus on, all right, well, what's the answer to that question? Which is really important because, to your point, when we're struggling with something, well, but this might happen, or I got to get through that, or like, right, all those distractions and all of those like problem-centric thoughts tend to try to like take over. But when we're asking ourselves that question, it quiets all that down because our brain wants to come up with the answer to that question. And so that question's a really powerful tool. It's one thing I can do right now that could help make this better. And so I just love hearing you talk about that, though, because that's exactly the journey that we should take through anything we're going through hard in life.
I'm totally going to use that question with people now. Just be like, what's one thing you can do to stay here right now? Just one thing. But, you know, like you said, you can apply it to anything in life too. Even through like nursing school. I just finished my second round, I guess, of nursing school. And you look at it and it's like, oh my God, I have all these things to do. I have all these assignments. I have all these classes. I have all these clinicals. Plus I have to work. Plus I have to like grocery shop and take care of the rest of my life and walk my dog and maybe, you know, like take care of myself a little bit too. And the way that I just kind of got through that, it's like, well, this is what I have to do right now. This is what I have to do for tomorrow. This is what I have to do. Like, you just kind of keep plugging away at it and it goes much quicker than you think it's going to go, honestly. But you can't stop. You just kind of have to keep moving forward. One little thing at a time. You know, it can feel very overwhelming when I'm like, oh my God, I have this whole like 3 months and it's going to be crazy. And I have clinical 2 days a week. I'm in class 3 days a week. I work 3 days a week. Plus I have a life outside of here. How am I going to get this done? It's like, nope, just today. I'm just going to get through today.
You start spinning.
Cool, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I took a day off of work so I could clean my house so that I could focus. But you know, it's like, that's what I needed to do that day so that I could keep moving forward. I couldn't focus on anything. I'm like, I got to clean my house. Got to do it now. Took the day off work.
Yes.
Clean my house so that I could keep moving forward. It's weird little things.
Yes. And the other thing that I think might be helpful for people going through recovery is that we often think that we're not going to feel better until we're at the end, right? Like, I'm not going to feel good about this. I'm not going to start feeling better until I've resolved my problem. I've, you know, been sober for X many days, or I'm walking comfortably on concrete, right? Like, but it doesn't actually work like that. We start to feel better as soon as we start making improvement to our current situation. Because you probably, like, you don't have to get through that next 3 months when you start to see, okay, I made a little bit of progress here. Like, we get that little dopamine boost, right? And so that starts to kind of fuel us along the way. It seems so huge when we're at the beginning of it. Like, I have to get this, I have to get all the way here, and there's so many obstacles along the way. How am I going to maintain that motivation and drive to get through it? Again, as soon as you start stacking those little wins along the way, like, I promise you're going to feel better. And that's going to kind of help fuel. It's still going to be hard. It's incredibly hard. But we do get those little dopamine boosts along the way for having those little wins.
Yep.
You wrote a book, right, about all this?
Yes. And guess what the title is? Relentless Solution Focus. So, pretty passionate about it. In fact, I was so mad. I was like, when I messaged Jake for the first time, I'm like, gosh, had this book not come out 3 years ago, I would have wanted this story to be in it.
You just have to write a little sequel.
Exactly. Well,
and you're working on the second.
Yeah, I am working on the next one. But yeah, where we, you know, we teach about this concept of relentless solution focus. And again, it is essentially optimism. you know, the mind's ability to stay focused on solutions, especially in the face of adversity. And so it's really simple. It's really simple. It's really concrete. That's one tool from the book, is that RSF tool. And so, you know, I teach a mental workout in there and something called the success log, where we work on developing self-confidence. We focus a lot on self-talk. That's something that Jake and I have talked about.
Getting coached by the master here. I now have a copy of your book, which I plan on reading this week as I pack up and move. Where can people find it?
So it's Amazon. It's on Amazon. I'm on Instagram, drellenreed.com. It should be available anywhere you would buy your books. Relentless Solution Focus.
Can I get it on
awesome.
My Kindle?
Awesome.
Does that work?
Yeah, it should. I'll send you one, Adrian. And
thank you.
Send me your address. I'll send you one.
Okay. I will.
But it's so, you know, and like I started when we first started this podcast, you know, how I work with professional athletes and these people in life and these people in life and these people in life, like the way you just detailed recovery is like, I don't know, that really just resonated with me, because it's the same. We're all made of the same stuff.
It's the same.
You know, we're all made of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just, both totally. Of you, I think should be so proud of yourselves, you know, and I would imagine, I've never dealt with addiction, and people in my life have, but I've never personally dealt with addiction. But I would imagine that going through that and kind of coming out on the other side of it, which I don't know if you ever feel like you're on the other side of it, but it would be easy to feel like a little bit of a sense of like guilt or just like kind of negative, just some negativity surrounding it. And I just look at you both, mm-hmm. and I think you should be nothing but proud of yourselves. You know, that's such a hard thing. Also, just like being where you are now and being able to inspire other people, that's huge. That is huge. So I don't know. I just thought that was worth saying, that I would imagine that would be a hard piece of it, that I have a totally different perspective on that.
It's nice to hear that.
It certainly is, too. Our piece of a lot of guilt mm-hmm. and self-confidence. You know, it seems like the moral of this is like it's all similar, coinciding feelings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's all putting in that work to achieve what you want to achieve to 100%. Better yourself.
100%. And that's different for us at different phases of our lives. It's different for different people, but we really are all made of the same stuff. And even me, like when I'm listening to Blink, right, and I hear the two of you on that podcast, it does feel a little bit like, oh, this guy is like this alien, right, like that did this superhuman thing, and you know, and but then I meet with you and I'm like, oh, he's just a normal person, you know, and mm-hmm. we're all made of the same stuff. And, you know, and I work with really some of the best in the world at what they do, you know, both in their business and in their sports. And we are all made of the same stuff. We all struggle. I don't have a single client who doesn't struggle with very real stuff, you know, like the big stuff that we don't often talk about in life. But I think what both of you are doing through this podcast is really allowing people to connect with the hard stuff in life and feel so much less isolated about what they're going through.
I want to give you the opportunity to ask me anything. I know we talk a fair amount and you the opportunity to ask Adrian anything.
Yep.
So, okay. It's maybe less of a question, but I was thinking about this. So, you know, whenever anybody, like, you know, I post on my social media, like, talking to Jake, anything anybody wants me to ask him, right? And, of course, everybody wants to know, like, well, what's going on with Ellen, right? Like, what's going on with
of course.
You know, did she poison him and this and that and, like, right? And I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think it would be really hard in your position to not be so consumed with like just the anger and like the hate and the all the things. You have every right to feel like that, right? But I could be wrong about this, but I feel like you've done such a great job of not letting that negativity consume your life in your future. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree?
I think I agree. So there are times when I think about like, okay, fact is, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I would say 80-20, 90-20 at this point. But I don't let it consume me because I don't want to let it consume me, because that would be pointless to go through all that to get to another place in life where all I do is think about something dumb and irrelevant. And that I want to make the best life I can have with my second chance at, if that's really fucked up. I mean, for a fact, she did a bunch of fucked up things. Like, but if she really caused this, that's really fucked up.
Yeah.
And if I find out definitively and a judge is like, you're guilty of this, I don't think it changes anything one way or the other for me. I'm not looking for that. I don't, it's irrelevant, kind of.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel. And so, you're right.
Yeah.
But every now and again, I think like, what a
Right. You
know, I think that's normal.
Right. I think that's pretty normal. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's really cool, Jake. You know, I think you just see examples of that. You know, I love true crime. When you see examples of, you know, people like who are victims of or their family, you know, and I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what that would be like. But I'm always so sad for people when I see that it just seems to have consumed their whole life. And they've had a really hard time moving on, you know, to, like you said, your second chance, your second chapter. So anyway, I just think that's been really cool to see. And so I did kind of want to ask you about your thoughts on that.
I'm glad you asked that.
That was a good question.
Anything for Big A?
So Big A, what, so I'm just curious. So when did you, like get sober? Like, what was your kind of story with that? Sorry, I know that's probably not a quick question, but
so it can be relatively quick. So I got sober. My clean date is November 1st, 2018. I went into detox on Jake's birthday. I went Halloween of 2018. And that was because I got into a lot of legal trouble. I ended up getting arrested the Friday before Labor Day weekend, and it was a trafficking charge. I really didn't have any choice. Like, I spoke to my lawyers and they were basically like, you gotta go to treatment. You gotta do something or you're gonna end up in jail for a long time. So I didn't really go like willingly because I wanted to better my life. I went because I was like, well, this is what I gotta do or I'm gonna end up in jail. And I didn't want to go to jail. I don't want to put my family through that. So I went, and I went with the purpose of literally going for detox and a 30-day program. And I was just planning on going right back to, I just hit the microphone.
Yeah.
I was planning on just going right back to my life in Worcester. I don't really know what it was that changed in my mind. I made it through detox, which I like really pretty much slept through. I don't remember a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in this 30-day program and I had my family meeting with my parents 3 weeks into that, and 3 weeks into that four-week program. And I basically was just like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to go back to Worcester. I was terrified of the person that I was with out there. And I just kind of was like, I don't really know what to do going forward from here, but I know I don't want to go backwards. So like, I'll do what you guys tell me to do. So I finished that 30-day program. I went on to an inpatient women's program for 2.5 months. And it was just like the little wins that you talk about or like the little achievements. It's like small attainable goals. One of them was like the first time I like really laughed. Like that was awesome. I was like, I haven't felt this in 10 years. You know what I mean? Another like weird little thing was the first time that I cried. I didn't cry for like a month and a half after getting clean. And it was just like, okay, like I have feelings, but I made it through that. And that was okay. It didn't like ruin me. You know what I mean? So yeah, I just like kept moving forward. I did like the sober house thing. I got a get well job. I worked at TJ Maxx for a while. And then I went back to massage. And I just kept kind of trucking through it. It's a weird thing. People are like, how did you do it? I'm like, I don't know. I just...
You did it.
I didn't want to go backwards.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
Rebuilding.
Yeah. Like, did you ever think, like, look at your life now, you know? And I'm sure that you probably have other goals that you know, like, I'm sure there's like a next step and like, you know, that you have your sights set on. But like, did you ever think that you would be where you are today?
Not even a chance. When I was in active addiction, I couldn't even imagine what my life was going to look like at down the road, because there was like no, you don't see that far. All you're thinking about is getting your next fix. I would never imagine that my life is what it is now, that I'm able to do the things that I do now. It's just, I was never good at school. I never thought I'd be able to get through nursing school, and now I've done it twice. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, to your point about the guilt thing, sometimes I feel guilty about being where I'm at because I see so many people struggle with it so much.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, why was it so easy for me? I only went to detox one time. People, like, relapse is a part of almost everybody's story. I haven't relapsed. I'm very, very thankful for that. But sometimes I'm like, why was it? Like, why did I get it and other people seem to struggle so much, you know? So there's like that weird little thing. But I'm also really proud of myself for getting here. And the only thing that I can do is to try to give back and help other people get there and share my story with them.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. It's a little bittersweet sometimes. It's weird.
I would imagine. And like, one thing I talk a lot to my people about, and like we've talked about this, but that self-talk, like those thoughts that we those conversations we have with ourselves, right? Like sometimes we just think that if we're thinking it has value and it has truth, right? And so sometimes I think it's really helpful to identify, like, kind of what you just said, like sometimes I catch myself thinking that, like, well, why was it so easy, you know? And like that whole train of thought, right? We identify like those conversations that we tend to go to, and then remind ourselves like, okay, there's no value to that. You know, when my brain wants to go there, I'm going to redirect it to, you know, I am using this phase of my life, you know, like to inspire other people, you know, like, but you are. Thank God. Thank God it was easy for you, which I think that easy may not be the best way to describe that. I'm sure it's pretty difficult.
Not necessarily, but
it's easy for you, right? Because now you're in the position where you're helping other people through it. And so, yeah, like our self-talk is so interesting. You know, it's like we just, and it underlies everything, like our self-image and our self-confidence and our belief in like who we are and what we have the ability to accomplish and what we work for. All of that is determined by the things that we think about ourselves and the things that we say to ourselves. And we have more control over that than we think. And so, you know, I think, again, like for both of you, like, and I think you remind yourselves of this, but, and you may hear it, but you probably also don't hear it enough, that both of you are so inspiring. You've gone through hard things, but that's what makes your story so cool, right? The fact that you've gone through those hard things. So when that guilt, that like that head trash that has no value of that, or that guilt kind of creeps in there, just remind yourselves like, man, I have gone through some hard stuff. And that's evidence that I can do anything I put my mind to.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you. And like, thank you for coming on. And also thank you for coaching me. And it's really been helpful.
Yeah. Well, my pleasure.